I will.
VOA 1, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Mario Ritter Jr. and Brian Lynn. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly will present America's Presidents. But first, the United States has ordered China to close its consulate in Houston, Texas. The order is the latest step taken by the U.S. to increase pressure on China over trade, technology, human rights, and security issues. The U.S. State Department released a statement early Wednesday saying the diplomatic office was closed in order to protect American intellectual property and Americans' private information. Foreign Ministry spokesman Wang Wenbin told reporters that China received the order Tuesday night. He said the order represented an escalation of recent actions against China. He accused the U.S. of targeting Chinese diplomats and threatening Chinese students. Wang warned that China would answer if United States policy did not change. At the consulate in Houston on Tuesday night, reports of papers being burned caused firefighters to arrive, but they were barred from entering. A local Houston television station showed video of smoke coming from an area inside the consulate. Houston police said workers there were burning documents in open containers in preparation for being ordered out. China has until Friday to close down the consulate. The business group Greater Houston Partnership expressed regret at the announcement. It says the consulate, first opened in 1979, has been important in building trade, investment, and cultural ties between the two countries. The U.S. also has decided not to reopen its consulate in the city of Wuhan, which has been closed since late January. Wuhan was the center of the start of the new coronavirus outbreak in China. A U.S. official, who did not have permission to discuss the issue, told reporters that the move might ease China's answer to the closure of the Houston consulate. Relations between the world's two largest economies have steadily worsened in recent months. The administration of U.S. President Donald Trump has denounced China for its treatment of ethnic minorities. As a result, the U.S. Commerce Department placed restrictions on 11 Chinese companies over human rights abuses in the Xinjiang area. As China established a new security law over Hong Kong, the U.S. said it would no longer treat Hong Kong as an autonomous territory from the mainland government. It said Hong Kong could face visa limits and economic measures similar to China. Last week, the U.S. State Department rejected China's claims to most of the South China Sea. In a statement, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said the claims are completely unlawful. Pompeo added the U.S. would consider protecting other countries in the area against China through legal means. And a State Department official suggested that economic measures could be placed on Chinese officials over the issue.
Professional baseball usually starts in April, but the public health emergency caused by the coronavirus has forced the cancellation of almost all sports, even the national pastime. This month, 30 Major League Baseball teams from 28 cities are planning to start a shortened 60-game season with no fans in attendance. Public health experts have voiced a number of opinions about whether Major League Baseball's plan can succeed. The first two games will take place between the Yankees and the Nationals in Washington, D.C., and the Giants and Dodgers in Los Angeles on July 23rd. Baseball games can work, said Dr. David Hamer, a professor of public health at the Boston University School of Public Health. I think it's feasible. Dr. Amesh Adalja, who works for the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security in Baltimore, Maryland, has concerns. There are certain sports that are higher risk versus lower risk, he said. Baseball, he added, is sort of an intermediate risk. However, Dr. Zach Binney, an epidemiologist at Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia, warns it could be a disaster. Some experts are hopeful for the baseball season because of the nature of the game. Baseball involves less contact and risk than basketball, American football, or hockey. However, players and their families will have to carry out measures to avoid getting infected away from the playing field. The National Basketball Association is playing all of its games in one place, Orlando, Florida. The National Hockey League will only have games in two Canadian cities. But baseball teams will travel around the country. Players will be tested every 48 hours. Masks covering the mouth and nose and social distancing, staying about 2 meters apart, will also be required, except on the field. There will be additional restrictions. Players will be banned from spitting, licking their fingers, or eating sunflower seeds. Mascots will not be permitted to approach players. Baseball officials have made rules for air travel, bus travel, private cars, and hotels. They have given guidelines calling for avoiding contact with people outside the baseball world. The players have prepared with 2 weeks of camps, and the results appear hopeful. With its current testing program, Major League Baseball says only 0.4% of tests have shown infections since June 27th. That is far below the national average of 9%. But there have also been problems. Delays slowed testing around the July 4th holiday weekend. And, so far, all but two of the 30 teams have had at least one person infected with the coronavirus. But the preventive measures and low infection rate have led many observers to be hopeful. That's a good starting point, said Hamer of Boston Medical Center. He has advised other professional sports teams. Testing is very important to Major League Baseball's plan. The organization is carrying out about 10,000 tests weekly. The league is using private laboratories to process the tests to avoid placing too much pressure on public testing centers. Experts are not worried that traveling teams might endanger communities. The groups will be relatively small. They also will use private transportation. Observers note that if there are a lot of infections, it will likely be from players getting infected in the community from social contact. Delayed professional baseball seasons have already started in Taiwan and Japan. I'm Mario Ritter Jr.
Researchers are studying the effectiveness of wearable devices to identify early signs of disease, including COVID-19. Many people already use devices such as the Fitbit or Apple Watch to measure their heart rate and other physical activity. Researchers are now studying whether this kind of technology could be used to watch for early warning signs of COVID-19. One such device is being tested at West Virginia University in the United States. Researchers there reported in May that it can identify COVID-19 symptoms up to 3 days before people start to experience them. The researchers are performing tests with a device called the Oura Ring. The ring worn on the finger has been around for about 2 years. It was designed to monitor physical activity, sleep effectiveness, and heart health. The ring sends the information it collects to an app, which rates the quality of the user's activities. The app uses artificial intelligence, AI, tools to predict the start of COVID-19-related symptoms, such as a high body temperature and breathing problems. The researchers said early tests had shown the system could predict the onset of COVID-19-related symptoms 3 days in advance. They reported a success rate of over 90%. Ali Reza is the head of the university's Rockefeller Neuroscience Institute. In a statement, Reza said he thinks the system can help to protect healthcare and emergency workers dealing with COVID-19 and other fast-spreading diseases. Recently, the National Basketball Association, NBA, decided to supply the Oura Ring to its players in an attempt to identify possible signs of COVID-19 as early as possible. Another research project is taking place at the Scripps Research Institute in San Diego, California. The DETECT study is examining data from devices worn by more than 30,000 volunteers. It aims to show whether wearables can predict the start of COVID-19 in people not yet showing symptoms. Scripps researchers already demonstrated the value of wearable technology in predicting viral infection. Their findings appeared earlier this year in the British publication, The Lancet. Results of both studies suggest the devices have the potential to identify people who are pre-symptomatic but still infectious, said Jennifer Radin, the leader of the Scripps research. She spoke to the French press agency AFP. Scripps researchers say they hope to demonstrate that data from wearables may be more dependable and effective than temperature readings. 40% of people who come down with COVID don't have a fever, Radin said. This is something that can be used to screen people that's better than a temperature check. One effective predictor can be a person's heart rate when he or she is at rest. Experts say this is because the resting heart rate usually remains unchanged before an infection. We see these changes in heart rate 4 days before someone starts to develop a fever, Radin added. Heart rates are easily and effectively measured by most wearables. Eric Topol, director of the Scripps Institute, told the AFP the idea of using wearables appears promising. He noted that more than 100 million Americans already have a smartwatch or other fitness monitoring device. While such devices can provide important data to researchers, Topol noted that getting good results requires persuading large numbers of people to take part in the studies. Researchers from California's Stanford University, in cooperation with Scripps, launched research in April on the use of wearables to detect COVID-19. Smartwatches and other wearables make many, many measurements per day, which is what makes them such powerful monitoring devices, said Michael Schneider. He heads the Center for Genomics and Personalized Medicine at Stanford's School of Medicine. Schneider added that AI-powered devices can be useful in helping individuals identify signs of a serious disorder that they may not detect themselves. Such technology could help people determine if they should stay home in case their body is fighting off an infection, he said. I'm Brian Lynn.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about Warren Harding. He was the 29th President of the United States. Harding was very different from the 28th President, Woodrow Wilson. Wilson supported change. Harding promised a return to normalcy. Wilson took steps to protect American workers. Harding often worked to protect business owners. Wilson was slow in supporting voting rights for women and in accepting African American people as equal to whites. Harding supported women's suffrage and civil rights for African Americans. Yet both men were popular during their years in office. Today, however, Historians usually think of Wilson as one of America's best presidents, but Harding is remembered as one of the worst. Warren Harding was the 8th president from the state of Ohio. His parents were both doctors. Harding spoke about having a happy childhood, growing up on a farm with his brothers and sisters. Some of his favorite early activities were performing in a band and working on his college newspaper. Later, Harding, along with two friends, bought a newspaper. It became successful for several reasons. Harding was kind to his employees and shared the company's profits with them. He also tried not to publish stories that criticized politicians or politics from any party. Finally, he married a woman who had an excellent head for business. Florence Kling Harding led the newspaper's circulation department. She also helped to direct her husband's political career. In time, Warren Harding became a state senator, a lieutenant governor of Ohio, and then a member of the U.S. Senate. He especially liked being a senator, and many of the other lawmakers liked him. One reason is because Harding rarely took a controversial position on any issue. Instead, he accepted most of the ideas of the Republican Party. He was also good-looking and had an excellent speaking voice. These qualities helped earn him the Republican presidential nomination in 1920. A few months later, he easily won the national election. President Harding took office shortly after World War I ended. He promised to make Americans feel calm again and also improve the nation's prosperity. Two of Harding's goals were to support business and to limit immigration. He succeeded on both issues. His administration reduced taxes for big businesses and wealthy people. It also increased tariffs, taxes on foreign imports. And the Harding administration put in place new rules on immigration. The rules made it easier for immigrants from Northern Europe to enter the country, but harder for immigrants from Russia, Eastern, and Central Europe. Harding also took steps to improve the effectiveness of the federal government. But his administration is remembered mostly for its problems. At the beginning of his term, Harding reportedly told friends that the job of being president was too much for him. He appeared to want to do well, and he worked hard, but he turned over most of the responsibility to his friends in the cabinet. A few were very able, but some were dishonest. They abused their positions to gain wealth for themselves and their families. One of the most famous examples of corruption during Harding's administration is known as the Teapot Dome scandal. The name Teapot Dome comes from a rock in the state of Wyoming. The rock looked like a teapot. Scientists correctly believed that oil could be found in the ground underneath it. At the time, the U.S. Navy depended on oil to fuel its ships. So, the federal government claimed the land in case the Navy needed to use the oil in an emergency. but a cabinet official who was a friend of Harding took control of the land. He gave a private company permission to search for oil on it in exchange for a large amount of money. Some lawmakers became suspicious, so they opened an investigation. In time, lawyers proved the act of corruption. Harding's friend was the first person to be found guilty of a crime while serving as a cabinet official. But President Harding did not live to see his friend go to jail. The investigation was just beginning when Harding took a trip to the West Coast to campaign for his policies. Some say that Harding was also trying to escape the problems in his administration. He reportedly told one reporter that worrying about what his friends were doing kept him awake at nights. During the trip, Harding showed signs of not being in good health. Doctors thought he could have food poisoning or pneumonia. He was taken to a hotel in San Francisco, California. For a day, he appeared to be feeling better. He was sitting up in bed, and then suddenly his body shook and collapsed. He died instantly. Reports at the time differed on the cause of Harding's death. Some even said that his wife poisoned the president to protect him from being punished for the wrongdoing in his administration. But most historians think that he had long suffered from heart failure and was struck by a heart attack. He was 57. Millions of Americans mourned over Warren Harding's death. They stood beside railroad tracks as his body traveled from California back to Washington, D.C. The following year, Florence Harding also died. She and her husband are buried together under a grand memorial in their hometown in Ohio. But in the years after his death, Harding's public image worsened. More corruption scandals in his administration came to light, and some historians have criticized him for not having a clear idea about how he wanted to lead the country. In 1927, a woman published a book saying she had a long but secret relationship with Harding, both before and during his presidency. She also said he was the father of her daughter. Genetic testing has confirmed her claim. More than 30 years after her book was published, a lawyer discovered love letters from Harding to a different woman. They confirmed that he had a long romantic affair with the wife of one of his friends. Harding had also been married at the time. These reports, as well as the corruption during his administration, damaged Harding's public image. But he also seemed to know that he would not be remembered as one of the best occupants of the White House. Instead, he tried to be likable and modest. He called himself a man of limited talents who was not fit for the office of president. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.